Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner, and the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union. Offering a full range of financial services, MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. For more information, www.mecu.com, or you can just go to steinershow.org, click on their banner on our website, and all the information will be right there, your local credit union. And now we're about to have a conversation with State Senator Catherine Pugh, who is seeking to become the next mayor of the city of Baltimore. And Senator Pugh, welcome. Good to have you in the studio.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Mark, I like that MeQ slogan. It's similar to what I'm talking about in this campaign, and that is investing in people, because it really is all about human capital. Great slogan.
It's good. It is a good slogan. I guess I had too much to our sponsors. I don't want to have to. But, but now you... You want to trade this title of senator in for mayor. So let's talk. This is a broad question first. I have a lot of very specific questions to ask you about things you said in the opening statement about property taxes, about many, many other things in the city. But you, what is pushing you to make this run? Because, A, we know historically in this city it is very difficult to beat, to unseat a sitting mayor.
Okay. I'm glad you said a sitting mayor and not an elected mayor.
No, but she was, you know, elected president of city council. She took over when Mayor Dixon was forced to step down, and she's a sitting mayor, so she's there.
Well, you know what? I tell everybody this because I've run for office a couple times. At the end of everybody's election, the seat belongs to the people. It's up to the people to decide who they want to represent them and who they feel will better further the agenda as it relates to the people of the city. And I tell you, I've really studied issues surrounding the city. And I'm really concerned about the continuous loss of population in Baltimore and the lack of what I consider investment in people who live here in the city. And so I studied the issues. I looked at it. I was a city council person. I was in house for 1 year. And my heart belongs to this city. You know, things that I've done, I think, really speak for themselves in terms of legislative agendas. I think I've passed a great deal of legislation in the General Assembly, really focusing on some of the issues that bother me about Baltimore. And just one specific piece of legislation, I don't know if you remember this, but one of the issues, and I was talking with the Annie E. Casey Foundation about this, and when people were being removed from their homes, or let's we say when we started developing areas of the city and people had to relocate because of eminent domain so that other areas could be redone. One of the issues that I had was that if you move people from one particular part of the city to another, if you've been in your home for a number of years and you pay a certain amount of taxes, if you move to another area, maybe those taxes are higher. And so I passed legislation in Annapolis that required when those individuals are relocated that they had the right to go to the city and ask that their taxes remain the same as where they were when they were moved from the particular location that they were. So, and the reason I point that out is because I heard a news piece that said, you know, she could have worked on the property tax issue when she was a state senator, but this is a mayoral-driven city. So where I could work on that, and that was a particular piece of legislation that I did do relating to the property tax, I did. The other issue for me when I was in the legislature, as I am in the legislature, was looking at how do you reduce the dropout rate in Baltimore. And so I had a study done in 2006 that looked at the increased dropout rate and what needed to take place, not just in Baltimore, but in the state of Maryland. And when I first did the study, I think we were at like a 10% dropout rate almost in Baltimore City in 2006. And one of the things that came out of the study was that the city needed to, and the state of Maryland needed to, create alternative education programs. And I have to say that I think Baltimore has done a better job of doing that than any other jurisdiction in the state. And the other piece of legislation that I put in place was not to suspend children out of school, but to suspend them in school or to these alternative programs. And it's working. So as a result of that, we've gone from almost a 10% dropout rate to now 4.5%.
You are happy with the work Dr. Alonzo is doing?
I'm happy with much of the work that's been done as it relates to the teachers union, Dr. Alonzo's, in terms of what we've been able to do. I am starting a new school in Baltimore, the Baltimore Design School. I'm really pleased at what's happening at the Green Street Academy. The question is, can we do more and can we do better? Absolutely. But, you know, we have a great deal of our funding now coming from the state as it relates to the public school system. And I don't think a lot of people understand how dependent we are on the state for funding for the public school system. And that's because we've lost so much population, again, in the city. And so we're not able to, in Baltimore City, to contribute what we ought to be contributing to the funding of the Baltimore City public schools.
So, folks, you can join us here at 410-319-8888. State Senator Catherine Pugh is here, 410-319-8888. She is running to become the next mayor of the city of Baltimore. It's your first chance to talk to her. We'll do many more conversations over this campaign trail and try to sponsor our own debate here at WEAA at Morgan State University for all the candidates later on in this campaign. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Now, you, like many of the other candidates, have talked about cutting the property taxes.
Well, let me first talk about what my platform is. You know, one of the things I'm concerned about is our young people and the lack of investment in human capital and young people and creating opportunities for them. You know, we always look at the summer jobs program, for example, for, you know, the employment opportunities for young people. And I'm originally from Philadelphia, and I'm one of seven children. And I remember my parents used to always give us X amount of dollars when it came time to go do our school shopping. And because what they promised us, what they promised each one of their seven children was a high school diploma. And so my father used to say, you don't have to work while you're in school. Just go to school, get your high school degree. And I remember in ninth grade getting my $100 to go get my school clothes. And I said to my dad, it's just not enough. I mean, I won't be able to get through the week. And he said, you need a job. Well, I found this program called Distributive Education Clubs of America. And it allowed me to go to school half a day and work a half a day because I wanted to earn money. And there are a number of young people who stand on the streets of our corners who are homeless. There are children who are supporting families. There are children who are in drug-addicted families who are supporting brothers and sisters. And they actually do need to work. And we need to create that kind of opportunity here in Baltimore. And that's what I'm looking forward to doing.
Well, I'll hold this property tax question for just a second because I want to follow up what you just said.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I listened to that opening statement you made. It was on the web, and Anthony McCarthy put it out on the web, and I was able to watch what you said, what you announced for mayor.
Mm-hmm.
I think most people wouldn't disagree with that, and groups like Safe and Sound are really pushing
a human agenda
in the budget. But so, how do you do that? I mean, in order to do that in the budget restrictions you have in the city of Baltimore, something has to give. Do you take it away from the police?
When you talk about what I'm talking about in terms of creating opportunities for young people, it means developing relationships with the business community, with government agencies, with public and private entities. You know, I was talking to some young people sitting on their steps the other day, and I asked the young man, I said, what do you want to be? One guy said he wanted to be a doctor. The other one wants to be a lawyer. One didn't know what he wanted to do. And so in Distributive Education Clubs of America, what our guidance person did was they created those opportunities for us in the private sector so that we could, in fact, what we had was what we called internships because you didn't get unemployment or that kind of thing, but you were actually able to go and work in those particular industries that you were interested in, and you were supported by those various industries. So that means that somebody's got to help undergird those kinds of things. And Dr. Argentine Craig, who was in charge of that program in Philadelphia, happens to live right here in Baltimore. So I know that we can do those kinds of things here in this city as well.
Let me alternate my questions with yours for State Senator Catherine Pugh, who's seeking to become the next mayor of the city of Baltimore, 410-319-8888. And folks, the electronic difficulties we're having today, I cannot see your name on the screen, as we usually do. So when I just say line one, tell us your name, introduce yourself, and ask State Senator Pugh any question you'd like. 410-319-8888, line one, you're on the air.
Hi, I'm Patria.
Welcome.
Hi, Ms. Pugh.
Hi, Patria.
I lived in Baltimore for 10 years. I have lived in a random sampling of a lot of different kind of neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm.
I lived in Roland Park. I lived in East Baltimore between North Avenue and Johns Hopkins. I lived in Brooklyn. I lived in Rolling. I lived in Remington.
Wow.
And I lived in Charles Village. So that's a pretty good sampling.
Yes, it is.
Yep, that is.
And one thing has come to me. And this is radical, but it makes sense. Why don't we decriminalize drugs? It solved the problems of prohibition,
mm-hmm.
okay? And the young people now even call themselves gangsters.
Mm-hmm.
If we could have people come and get what they need
mm-hmm.
in a clinic that's clean, it's a dose for their body, they would pay a minimum amount. We would watch them to make sure they don't have any bad effect. They would sign a contract that said in a certain amount of time they will seek treatment. But we need to take those men off the street and offer them something else, because there are wide and vast areas of Baltimore that cannot be used. No Fortune 500 company is going to want to bring anything to Baltimore City. When they see those men standing there and people come up to them, and come on, you know, you go up to a red light or a stop sign, and they come up and say, hey, can I get you something? You walk down the street, they yell, Shirley, boy, girl, green tops, all this. Thing is, Baltimore is a beautiful city. It's been my family's city since it got off the boat. And I love those people, but when you come into certain places, there is nothing else for those young people to do.
Let me just only interrupt you, because I want to let...
I'm going to shut up and
no, that's cool. I just want to let the state senator answer the question. Go ahead.
Okay, let me just say that I remember when Kurt Schmoke was the mayor, and he tried to advance that discussion. And it really is a federal discussion. It's something that, you know, leadership can, in fact, partake in. But it's something that you can't do individually. It has to be done at the federal level. Now, at the state level, what we have done as it relates to medical marijuana, we have passed legislation for that. But it is a federal issue, and I do believe that Kurt Schmoke did try to advance that discussion at a federal level, and is a discussion that has to be had at the federal level.
From what you were saying, I mean, do you support a move to decriminalize drugs? We stop arresting people for drug possession and
I think we need to minimize what we're doing as it relates to criminalizing people for certain behaviors and creating records for people when they're minimally involved in this kind of activity. But I do believe that it's something that needs to be looked at more closely at a federal level.
What about locally, though? She was asking, what can we do locally?
Well, I think what we're doing locally right now as it relates to some of the drug problems is creating more drug treatment provisions and opportunities for people, and trying to help folks who have real serious problems manage their drug addiction.
410-319-8888 is the number here. Let me go to line 2. You're on the air, and identify yourself, please.
Hi, Kathy. Just Happy Pig, right? Yeah,
yes,
I'm a city resident, just like the last caller. Mm-hmm. And I called you just because I want to really see you get in office. But just to kind of go back when she was mentioning the decriminalization of drugs, it's not totally a federal issue, Ms. Pugh. One state, I think it was Connecticut, or one of them just decriminalized
at the state level.
And the penalty and all like that. And that's what we need to start at least decriminalize the amount of with possession and all like that. However, I'm not no attorney, and that's not what I called you
but
for.
But you're right in terms of at the state level, you can do that at the state level.
Right.
And there are
right.
laws that are being changed, and I think we can work more forcibly on lessening the penalties for certain levels of possession.
Right, but my question is, I want to see you get in office, and this is the question I want to ask, because I've been looked at the last couple of mayoral elections in Baltimore City, and one thing I've been noticing is that the top of the tickets, the mayoral candidates, and more so than and really the president of city council candidates also, but I'm not going to get into that because you're not running for that. But how do you guys expect to get in office when the mayor runs and she backs all the incumbent city council people that are in office now, and then the top of the ticket, just like when Keith was missing all these councils, running, they were running like Napoleon by themselves. They went back, and none of the other people that was trying to upseat the incumbent council people and all. And I was wondering, do you plan on backing any of these people who's trying to upseat some of these incumbent council people? And if so, who are they that
you're
going to support?
All right. All right. First, let me give you our campaign headquarters address, 819 East Baltimore Street, and the phone number to talk to me directly, because I'm not going to lay out my entire strategy here on the air, 410-685-7844. You also should go back to some other elections where, in fact, someone was not an incumbent and they did win. And there are a couple of those, and we can talk directly about them. Because, again, I don't want to lay out the strategy, but I think that when you develop a campaign that's around people, and I tell people, people vote. People vote. And oftentimes we think because people are incumbents that they automatically get in office. And that, in fact, is not the case. And I believe that our movement across the city of Baltimore, when you talk about investing in human capital, when you talk about cutting the property tax in the way that I'm talking about cutting the property tax, and I'm first saying, let's start right here in Baltimore with the people who live here. Because people are talking about, well, it's impossible. It can't be done because you got to bring X amount of people to the city. I said, but you know what? 49% of this city's population, are renters. Why don't we begin with that population? 49%, over 100,000 people are renting in this city. Well, what about the college students and who come out of our colleges and universities? Right here in Baltimore, we have 10 colleges and universities with thousands of people graduating every year who could, in fact, get tax credits to become first-time homeowners. Why don't we deal with those folks? Why don't we create the pipeline that allowed those folks to become homeowners? And then the Dollar House Program. Why don't we allow people to use sweat equity and to become homeowners? I saw a woman, 72 years old, in the 1100 block of Barclay Avenue. Okay, she's been renting from city property for over 50 years, and we didn't take the time to say, well, you know what, miss, you could own this house by now. And so I know that it can be done. And the way that the media wants to depict it is that you're going to walk in office and immediately cut the property tax by $400, you know, and which would cost the city $400 million. I'm saying over a period of time. If, in fact, if you just even do the numbers, if you take 30%, if you convert 30% of the renters over 30% every year into homeowners, if you take 10,000 of the students, 5,000 people doing a Dollar House programs a year. I mean, it's not rocket science. So those who don't believe it can be done, I'm telling you that Catherine Pugh has done the math, have read the studies, understand what needs to take place. And if we begin to invest right here in the people who live here, and then the new people who want to come to our city, because I am looking at how do we grow Baltimore by 2020 by another 80,000 people? We can do this. This was a city of almost 900,000 people. And every year, they, you know, for the last decade, they said we weren't losing that many people. We weren't going to lose. We weren't going to lose that many people. Well, we've lost another 30,000. So I'm saying, when does it stop? Who begins to focus on how you build Baltimore? How do you create an additional tax base? And what is it that needs to take place to make that happen? And I say that it's leadership, visionary leadership, that has done the homework, understands the numbers, and can make it happen.
Now, before we go to line three, so hold on, you're the next caller, line 345. We'll go on those. And so all these people calling are going to, you will get on the air. We have plenty of time left. So keep calling at 410-319-8888. Now, you mentioned property taxes. Let me just ask this question. You mentioned a bunch of other things I'm going to try to get in about homeowners and renters. Mm-hmm. I want to get to that as well, because these are really critical issues.
Yes.
So you created this housing, what I read in the paper, in The Sun, was that you created a commission to look at the question of property taxes.
Property tax reduction.
Is that correct?
Right.
All right. So, but I'm curious where you think it's going to go. And the reason I ask you is this. Mayor Dixon had a commission like that. Bob Embry was on it. Jody Landers was on it, who's running for mayor now. Otis was on it, who's running for mayor. Mm-hmm. It was Raleigh. And none of them could come up with – they couldn't come up with an answer that would work. Because as you just said, like if they wanted to take money away from the property taxes.
No, because everybody talks about adding people to the city. But nobody talks about investing in the people who currently live here. You got 49% of your population who are renters.
Who are renters.
That's over 100,000 people who are renters. If you converted one-third of them every year for the next 4 years, you'll be turning people into homeowners. And then...
But the question is, how do you do that? When you have like almost 18% of all the renters in the city right now are spending over half their income.
How much is half their income?
These are people living in poverty for the most part.
Yeah, but you also have people who are not living in poverty who are renters as well. I didn't say you're going to be able to convert all of them. I said you've got over 100,000 people who are renters. If you were converting 30% of those every year, 30% of those into homeowners.
How do you do that? How would you do that?
You set up a program that recruits people who are renters, just like you recruit from colleges and universities. You create a pipeline from those institutions to the community.
Where's the money come from them to be able to buy the homes? How's that?
You've got a $5,000 tax credit program here for first-time homeowners. You've got people who, first of all, you change the culture of the way people are go out into home ownership. You know, my niece bought her first home at 19 years of age. You know, my cousin brought her first home at 26. When I talked to Scott, he bought his first home at 18 years of age. We're not teaching people that home ownership is the key to the American dream here. And I'm saying, let's start with people who are young. Let's take folks who are renting and let's convert them. Let's teach them what they can do with their income. Because when you buy a home, it becomes the greatest asset that you can ever have. My home helped me to start my business, as it has a number of other folks. We've got to teach people that they can do these kinds of things, that they can do better. I was talking to a woman on the phone today. She said, you know, you're right. I've got two students graduating from college, and I didn't even think to talk to them about when will they buy a home.
I guess one last question this time. We'll go back to the phones. But what I don't understand is, and I think it's a phenomenal idea, but what I don't understand is how they get to buy the home. Where does the money come from them to buy this home?
It comes from money that they've saved. It comes from property tax credits. It comes from all kinds of areas. First-time home buyers program that a lot of people don't know about. Monies that people have saved instead of buying a car. As my father said to me, buy a house before you buy a car. You know, we have folks buying cars and putting $3,000 and $4,000 down on a car before they buy a home. If you buy a home, you can save to buy a car because you will develop equity that you can earn, that's yours. And we're not teaching people those kinds of things. And I'm saying this is about educating the public, giving them more information about what they can do in order to increase their quality of living. And home ownership is the key.
Catherine Pugh is with us, state senator. She is seeking to become the next mayor of the city of Baltimore. And line three, you can identify yourself. You're on the air.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Welcome.
Hi, Mark. She's hit the nail on the head for me. That's exactly what my question is around. Mm-hmm. I know in D.C. there is a law where people who have been renting for an extensive amount of time, say 10 years or more, mm-hmm. and say the owner decides to, okay, I want to sell the property. There's a law where he has to give who's already renting the property and lives inside the property, mm-hmm. he has to give them first dibs
right.
to buy the property. There is not anything like that here in Maryland, and I would like to see that here. And I think that would help solve some of the problems that you're talking about to buy first homes, because right. I myself had that happen to me. I was in a place for 11 years. I wanted to buy it, and I was kicked out. The owner wanted to sell it to whoever he wanted to buy it.
Mm-hmm.
And I've heard that happen to other people as well. They lived in there. One woman lived there for 21 years, and she was kicked out.
Mm-hmm. And that was the lady I was talking to the other day. She's lived in the community for 50 years.
Yeah.
50 years, and the city has brought up the properties on that block, and she has to move. 50
yeah.
years she's been renting, and that
so
doesn't make sense.
Yeah, you are on the right track, and
thank
I
you.
Think the community will support you with
thank
that.
You, thank you. And then let's talk about the boarded up houses. Instead of bundling up all of these houses and giving them to developers, you know, I sat down with Habitat for Humanities, who can reconstruct a property for half of what some of these developers are doing.
That's putting the community's money into the community
right.
and making it grow.
Right. And the dollar house program. You know, and when I talk about sweat equity, if I said to you, look, I'm going to give you this house. It's been boarded up for the last decade for $1. All I'm asking you to do for the next decade, okay, is give me $3,000 a year for property tax, okay? Fix that house up and live in it. Can you imagine getting 5,000 and 10,000 people a year to do that kind of thing? I'm saying that's vision. That's leadership. That's what this city needs.
Thank you for your call. We still have 30,000 vacants in this town.
Yes, at least. At least.
And
we're bundling up a lot of them, and we're giving them to developers. And when they get through fixing them up at probably about a cost of about $100,000, and then they've got to make money off of it. So now it's whatever. It's more than it could be if, in fact, you were able to get it yourself for a dollar.
And you think this is the mayor has her vacancy?
And let me just say this. I'm not saying that we don't include developers in this process, because there is some room for doing those kinds of things. But I'm saying let's invest in the people first. Let's give them the opportunity to, in fact, do these kinds of things themselves. I want to see Baltimore working. I want to see Baltimore becoming a home ownership town. I want to see young people investing in themselves and becoming homeowners. I want to see folks being very proud to be in a neighborhood. You know, home ownership, there's nothing like home ownership, because people who own homes take pride in their neighborhoods, and we can do this.
Catherine Pugh is with us, 410-319-8888, and line four, you're on the air. Identify yourself and ask your question. Hello, you're on the air.
8888, and line four, you're on the air. Identify yourself and ask your question. How you doing, Mark?
Good, good. Turn down your radio and jump in.
How you doing, Mrs. Pitt?
How are you, dear?
Okay, I'm calling. I live in Orange Mills, but I had the pleasure of meeting you, I believe it probably was a year ago out there, Super Fresh out in Towson. I was sitting on the parking lot where I actually worked in there, and you got out your truck and you was walking in. And when I was walking in,
You still there?
We lost him.
To hear that you are actually running, I'm ecstatic over there. I hope you win. Even living in Orange Mills, I'm going to try to get involved in your campaign somehow to help you get to this goal. It's a pleasure to hear you constantly speak about Baltimore City, and you haven't mentioned the harbor yet, which is a good thing. I just hope that throughout this election, hopefully you win, and I just hope Martin O'Malley stay out of this and let the people of Baltimore City decide who they want and not who he likes.
Okay. All right. Come on down to the campaign headquarters, 819 East Baltimore Street. We'd love to have you.
Thank you for your call. Let's get another caller in here before we have to take a break at 410-319-8888. Line 5, you're on the air, and identify yourself, please.
Hi, my name is Monica Cooper. I wanted to first commend the senator on a really, really fine showing in Annapolis this session. Your support of returning citizens is remarkable.
Thank you.
I am truly, truly proud, and I was honored to be there to be witness to the Band of Box movement. Which
oh, wow. Thank you.
I believe it will pass the next session. And as I am affiliated with a nonprofit organization and not in the position to endorse my support or give my support as a taxpaying citizen and as a returning citizen myself, you have my support hands down.
Thank you so much.
And
thank you.
It's the question of crime in the state and in the city is one that keep a lot of folks not wanting to appear soft on crime.
Mm-hmm.
But for you to come out and to, you know, fight for returning citizens and realize that folks do need a second chance and that there is a labor force in returning citizens. There are people who want to come back, the right to return. Mm-hmm. They want to get back to their communities, and they want to build up those same communities that they once were a part of tearing down. When you talk about sweat equity, I know at least 10 folks who made mistakes in their lives who are willing to do anything. Give them a hammer, give them tools, and they will build it.
All right, we have to take a very brief break, and I want to let Senator Pugh come back and talk about crime, which I want to talk about, and people returning from our prisons.
Okay.
410-319-8888 is the number here. We have a lot of callers. We're going to get to all your calls. Those four people online and the other two calling in, you're going to be on the air. So just hold on. We'll come right back with State Senator Catherine Pugh, who's going to become the next mayor of the city of Baltimore. Reminding you, the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland State Mortgage Late Don't Wait program. For more information and personal counseling, the number is 1-877-462-7555. We will be right back. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner. As we return to our conversation with State Senator Catherine Pugh in our constant conversations with our mayoral candidates, I want to remind you that WEAA is in need of raising an additional $20,000 before June the 30th in order to hit our end-of-the-year fiscal goal. You can make your tax-deductible contribution to WEAA securely online at weaa.org and sustain what is your public radio station. You can make it happen because you want to make it happen. Maybe you didn't contribute during the drive. Now's the time to do it. Just go to weaa.org. This means so much to keeping these programs growing on this station. We want to thank you for all your support and making, because you make a difference in public radio in this city. You make the difference to public radio. WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, is counting on you. Go to weaa.com. We are here with State Senator Catherine Pugh. Before we go to our next caller, let me go back. We'll get to these callers. I'm going to come back to where we said we'd leave off, which is crime.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm curious. Crime is always an issue in the city of Baltimore.
It's always an issue, yes.
So what makes your approach different than anybody else's approach to the issue of crime? Or does it? Or is it any different?
I don't know that it's that different as much as it is focusing on community protection and getting more involved in community policing. But I was talking to an ex-offender this morning, and he said, it's about community protection. It's about getting people more involved in your neighborhoods. And one of the things that I started when I was a city council person was an organization called Baltimoreans United to Light Baltimore Bulb. And the whole concept was to light up our city streets so the people, so that we could create a more walkable, safe neighborhood. If you go to Philadelphia, for example, and I know many of us have gone to New York, you can walk out on the street any time of day or night. It's nothing to walk from 40th and Market to downtown Philadelphia because they've made it a walkable city. The same thing in D.C. You don't see people walking from Ashburton to Mondawmin. And we can create that kind of environment where people feel safer in their neighborhoods. We just got to become more protective of our communities. And part of that, too, is, and I was going back and listening, I was really thinking about what the woman said earlier about decriminalizing drugs. We also have to figure out how do we do drug treatment in communities that don't destroy neighborhoods. And I remember when the folks over in Ruston were getting very upset about putting group homes in their neighborhoods.
Right.
But I'm looking at a strategy where we look at how do we create, and you'll have to forgive me, I went to a kibbutz community in Israel,
mm-hmm.
and you know what that is, and I hope other folks out there will understand a little bit better. Kibbutz communities are communities where money doesn't exchange hands, but services do. And I wanted to create some, and when I came back, and this was back in 1994, I said, God, we should be able to do something like this when you think about doing drug treatment and job training. There are areas in and around our city where we could do these kinds of things and not infringe on neighborhoods. And I can give you some examples of that across from St. Agnes Hospital. I don't know what's going to happen to Cardinal Gibbons High School, but there's a big piece of land there where we could create real job training and drug treatment and getting people back together with their lives and then back in our communities. We have got to allot for the 9,000 people who come back to our cities every year from prison. You know, but these are people who come back to families. They come back to neighborhoods. And we've got to be able to create the job opportunities and give them an opportunity to, in fact, better their lives. And we can do that in Baltimore. And it really is around the culture of the Center for Urban Families, for example, that reaches out to young men and women now who have had issues, whether it's been involved in crime, unable to pay child support. But what we want to do and what we're training those folks to do is to get their lives back together. But in that process, teach people about home ownership. Teach them how they can become more economically stable while they're in the process of improving their lives. And I just don't think that we're focused enough on doing those kinds of things. And so for me, it's human capital, investing in our people, creating the opportunities so that we can, in fact, become a city that is not the highest unemployed jurisdiction in the state, that is a city that is working, that doesn't have the highest rental accommodations in the state, but in fact are moving people towards home ownership, towards stability in their lives. And that's changing the culture of how we do business in Baltimore and who we invest in.
Catherine Pugh is here. She's running to become the next mayor of Baltimore. 410-319-8888. Line 1, you're on the air. Please identify yourself and ask your question.
Yes, Ms. Pugh, this is Alba Cruz. I'm Sierra Joe's grandmother.
Mm-hmm.
And my granddaughter, when 2002, as you can recollect, was starved to death, beaten to death, and sexually molested.
Mm.
And has 700 sores and wounds.
Wow.
You wanted a person to help pass the bill.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to know, what can you do when you become mayor to help to stop the abuse that's still going on under the Department of Social Service care and jurisdiction?
Well, you know, we passed some, as you well know, because you were the leader in Annapolis trying to get legislation passed. And we've passed since then some additional legislation as it relates to child abuse and sexual abuse against women, creating more penalties, and not just against women, because we've seen it against young boys and men as well, but more so trying to create more penalties and stronger sentences for individuals who get involved in that kind of activity. And so my prayers are continue to be with you. And I wish you the best, and we'll continue to work on those kinds of efforts.
I mean, there's some of what you talk about, then we'll go back to the phones here, folks. The folks who are waiting, you will get on the line in just a minute, on the other minute.
Can I say one other thing to her? Because she's an advocate.
Sure.
And when you hurt that deeply, as she's been hurt, and one of the things that she did was she went beyond her own hurt to say, look, we need to stop these kinds of things from happening. And that's, and I tell people what I do at the end of every session, at least as a state legislator, is I listen to people. I go around the communities, I sit down, I talk with folks, and I begin to craft legislation. And people will tell you in Annapolis that I write my own legislation. I mean, I've advocated on behalf of legislation that makes sense to me, but I actually sit down and listen to people. And that's where, for example, the legislation as it related to the property tax came from. It was sitting down, listening to people in communities saying, you know, we're hurting. This hurts us when we have to do this. And so, again, let me just say thank you for doing that, but more importantly, continue to advocate, and we'll continue to do.
So, I mean, what would you do differently when it comes to the budget than what's being done now? I mean, we're going to be talking this week with some young people and others from Safe and Sound who will be sitting in this room with elected council members to mm-hmm. talk about the budget. So they hear from a different angle. But when they call for investing $2 million in after-school programs, $6 million in putting kids into summer programs in the city of Baltimore, where does that come from?
Well, let me just say this. First of all, as the next mayor of Baltimore, who's focused on growing the city, who's focused on investing in human capital, which begins with our young people, they become a priority. But because, see, as I'm looking at the budget and taking what is necessary as it relates to the development of our young people, I'm also growing the city at the same time. So I'm going to make the money become available. When you talk about investing in neighborhoods through human capital and creating an expanded tax base, because that's what we're talking about doing, it has to begin with our young people. If we're not investing in their future, then I think we're not doing what we're supposed to do. It can't be about maintaining the city. It has to be about growing and investing in the people. So for me, it will always be around the young people first. And then, you know, the other thing is to look at where we're wasting money in our city budget. And while I've begun to scrub the budget and I've got folks who are looking at it, I mean, there's some areas I'm sure that we'll have to make some sacrifices when we talk about, you know, what has to be cut and what should be grown. I just believe that investing in our young people come first.
Well, how do you do things like keep open rec centers? I mean, let me ask a question. Do we literally say that in order to invest in human capital, that you have to have maybe fewer police hired, more safe streets, and more rec centers? Is that the kind of balance you have to make?
Let me just say this to you. I was over off of Franklin Town Road the other day where the young men spent $170,000, the members of the community, raised money for the softball field, okay? They've raised it. They want to run the rec center. They've already proven, okay, that they can maintain a rec center. There are community groups.
Which community was this again?
This is over off of Franklin Town Road.
Yep.
Okay?
Yep.
They have their own softball team. The people in the community raised the money to fix the field, okay? And I'm telling you, I'm running across men specifically and women who are investing in programs for young women, but they're investing in programs all the time. They are willing to operate some of these community centers. And I think we ought to give our people in our community a chance to do that. You know, I asked the young people in my community, what do you want? And they said, we want to be able to play basketball after school. We want to be able to do it in our schools. So, I mean, we can let people use community centers to do community meetings. Then we can use them for our young people. I'm saying let the communities do it because they're willing to do it. Let the groups and organizations who raise money all the time to provide uniforms. I was up in Park Heights, off of Ricestown Road, in that little field where the reverend over there takes over 200 children every week, okay?
Right.
Every day he has those children. And you know what they learn first? Respect for self, how important they are. Before they get on the field, they go through this whole regimen about how important they are. Respect for self, respect for the community, respect for property. He'd love to have a community rec center. He works with the church, and he does it every day. So I'm saying let's work with our community. Again, you know, the way we do things here does not necessarily mean that it's wrong. But what I'm saying is we can do it better. Because if we invest in humans and in our human capital in our communities, allow people the authority to do things that they want to do to better their communities, I'll bet you a dollar to a dime you'll see a better Baltimore.
Catherine Pugh is with us. She's running to become the next mayor of Baltimore. Line 6, you're on the air. Welcome and identify yourself.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I'm actually a sociologist who studies economic and community redevelopment, so I have a lot to say.
Mm-hmm.
But first, I'm actually a huge supporter of the senator, mm-hmm. And I preface this because I have some critical things to say, but I think it's useful to sort of push the discussion beyond the current bounds, because I absolutely agree that human capital needs to be the focus of our redevelopment strategies. However, I'm questioning whether or not home ownership in and of itself is the vehicle to do that, because first of all, you've mentioned, you know, many times that we're going to be recruiting from colleges. But what about the residents of Baltimore who haven't gone to college and who only have available to them low-income service jobs, right? Okay. McDonald's recently announced that it's going to hire 60,000 people, which sounds great as a public relations gimmick, but when we look at that, it actually means that 60,000 people are going to be spending up to 8 hours a day in front of boiling grease, earning substandard wages. And so I think that we need to look very carefully at the ways in which we regulate, first of all, a living wage in the city. That mm-hmm. should be, I think, a number one priority, because mm-hmm. the majority of Baltimoreans are not actually looking at home ownership, even if that's a great vision. Mm-hmm. However, when we look at the reality, we need to be investing precisely in those people who maybe are not able to go to college.
I agree with you.
And the second thing, I absolutely agree with you that we need to redirect money away from developers and invest it in the community. One of the ways that I think that this could be done is through developing community gardens, you know, like Detroit has been doing. If we redevelop and we create community gardens, first we can address the problem of food deserts in so mm-hmm. many areas of Baltimore where the corner stores only have fried lake trout and mm-hmm. fried chicken, and yet you can't find fresh vegetables. And if we subsidize the jobs at community gardens, like we subsidize, for example, Inner Harbor redevelopment, mm-hmm. because we're willing to give money to you know, multimillionaires to build hotels, yet we need to be able to give money to the sort of residents to sort of cultivate and solve their own problems. I agree with you. Now, ultimately, I just want to say that
okay.
one of my concerns is that when we talk about human development and we talk about sort of people developing community rec centers, I absolutely agree that we should give them authority, but we cannot cut funds. And when we talk about cutting property taxes, we're cutting revenue to the city to support social services. And so I absolutely agree with sort of responsibility and the community managing its own issues, but we have to fund that as well.
Let me begin to address some of the things
that you're saying, because many of what you've already said, I totally agree with. And it is not just about, and if you heard me correctly when I first started speaking about who should we be investing in as it relates to home ownership, I talked about the first time my niece bought a house was when she was 18 years old. And another young lady I met recently, who is now a real estate person, bought her first home at 19 years of age. So these are students who are coming out of high school as well, who are equipped to earn a certain level of living. And you're right. One of the things that we ought to be looking at when we talk about contracts and so forth in Baltimore is making sure that we're making Baltimoreans work. And someone said to me the other day, did you notice all the trucks from New Jersey involved in a certain contract? Why aren't those jobs being given to people in Baltimore? I think we've got to be, and that's when I talk about human capital, I just think we have to be focused all the time as leaders of the city on who's employed in the city. How do we make sure that we are uplifting the people who are at the poverty level? What is it that we need to do in order to increase their economic stability? And those are the kinds of things that I'm going to be focused on. But you're right. I mean, when I walk in the door, it won't be a $400 million cut to the city's budget. I said I want to cut property taxes in half over the next four or so years. But what I'm saying is that if I'm looking at that over a four-year period, what I'm talking about is about $100 million a year. Where does that come from? It doesn't mean that I've got to cut the budget. What it means is that I've got to increase income for the city. Does that mean that the 30,000 people that I'm talking about on an annual basis that we can convert from renters to homeowners, and then you look at getting people involved again who are coming out of colleges and universities and out of high school who are equipped because their parents are willing to help them do those kinds of things. And the community garden program actually was started under, I think, Mayor Dixon some years ago, Clean and Green. Her whole concept was to get us to develop gardens and provide garden food for people in these neighborhoods where markets, in fact, and fresh vegetables aren't available. And I think the other thing the gentleman said, which I really do agree with, is redirecting our community block grant money so that we're investing in our neighborhoods, that we're giving the same kind of breaks that we're giving to downtown developers. Let's give it to community development and make things happen in our city. Thank you.
I mean, let me just ask a couple follow-up questions, and we'll come right back to the phones here and get these other callers in before the end of the hour. But how, if we take $100 million a year out of the budget.
I didn't say take $100 million
out. Out of property. Right.
I didn't say take $100 million out of the budget. But I said create $100 million in home ownership is what you're talking about.
You think
about
you can do that in 1 year?
No, I didn't say it in one year.
I'm confused. That's why I'm asking.
No, I said you can create that kind of thing which will become spiraling throughout the city if you begin to focus on, one, your renters, of which you have over 100,000 every year in this city. You begin to focus on that population. Then you focus on the population of the college students in the universities. Then you focus on those who are capable coming out of high school. Then you create the Dollar House program. All of those things going on at the same time. And the new people who are coming in the city. We don't have that revenue now. So we can use that money to cut the property taxes.
So you're not saying that you move in as mayor of Baltimore if you should win, and then you begin cutting property taxes right away?
No, I'm saying that I said over a four-year period, I plan to cut the property tax in half. And that's what the Property Tax Reduction Commission will show us how to do it. I've got the means by, or at least the measures that I think that they can look at, including, again, turning the 49% of the renters into homeowners, creating the Dollar House program, looking at the colleges and universities, creating that pipeline, looking at what Habitat for Humanities can do to help us, redirecting community block grant money, getting that focused on how we can get homes to people less expensively.
I think that's an incredibly powerful idea. The question is, do you think that can make up $383 million?
Absolutely.
You do?
Do the numbers. Do the math.
I've been trying to. I just haven't figured that out yet.
30,000 people, if you do 30,000 people times an average of $3,000 a year, that's $90 million there. If you take another 5,000 or 10,000, do the math, multiply by 3, you'll get to $100 million a year. It's not rocket science. It can be done.
Catherine Pugh in the studio, 410-319-8888. We go now to line 2. You're on the air.
Ms. Pugh, it's good to hear you on the air.
Thank you.
I've been watching your career since you were a teacher at the Community College of Baltimore years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Also, when you worked as a city councilman for the city. And I've watched you for a long time. And one thing I know about you, you are a fighter. You are committed to people, to uplifting people, and I'm glad that you're running for mayor, and personally, you definitely have my vote. I hope the forces that be have not changed you. My deepest sense is that they haven't,
mm-hmm.
that you're still committed to lifting up people and making this city a better place to live and prosper in. And Ms. Pugh, I just want to say thanks, and you have my vote.
Thank you so much. Thank you. I wanted to say a few other things, Mark, because I know you're a little bit skeptic, and as a talk show host, you're supposed to be.
Exactly.
Okay. But I remember, I'm just talking about little simple things, mm-hmm. okay? I remember when I became a city council person, and I went downstairs and I knocked on the mayor's door and I said, I think it was Dan Roderick had done a column about the city council person who's a marketing person who wants to bring back the city fair, so it's going to be interesting to see the kinds of things that she wants to do. And I remember I got all of these ideas came in from people because of that particular column. And one of them was, have you been to Chicago to see the cows? And I said, yes, I have. They said, can you do something like that here? And I got this call from a woman named Leslie Landsman, who was working at the aquarium. And she said, what do you think? Can we do fish? And my answer was, yes, sure we can. And people laughed at me. They thought it was silly. And I said, I knocked on the door and I said, look, Mr. Mayor, I'd love to do this fish out of water project, and we're going to put fish all over the city. It's going to put smiles on the faces of people. And that massive project that put those fish all over the city that people thought I couldn't make happen, they didn't think I could make it happen. But you know what happened? We raised $1 million, okay? And you know where that money went? It went to wire the classrooms and provide instruments for the children. When I was walking through the Associated Black Charities event almost a decade ago, Katie O'Malley was getting ready to run a marathon in D.C. And I said, oh, God, why are you going to D.C.? Baltimore should have its own marathon. I walk up to the mayor and I said, look, the city should have its own marathon. And people thought, oh, what's the big deal? Oh, it's not going to happen. That first year, we started out with 6,000 people, an $8 million impact, and today is 22,000 people, a $28 million impact. So what I say to people about Catherine Pugh running for mayor, don't tell me what I can't make happen. Watch me make it happen, because I will.
Catherine Pugh has been our guest this hour. She's running to become the next mayor of the city of Baltimore. Catherine, good to have you in the studio. State Senator, thank you for being here.
Always a joy, Mark. I can't help from being on fire. That's just who I am. Thank you.
Look forward to having more conversations during the course of the campaign. On the way out of here, I have to remind you the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the University of Maryland, Marlene and Stuart Greenebaum Cancer Center, an NCI-designated cancer center providing research, treatment, and education to further the prevention of and cure for cancer. Online at www.umgcc.org. Or for information, 1-800-888-8823, or go to steinershow.org and click on the University of Maryland Medical Center banner. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Justin Levy and Cricket Aronson. We're engineered by Akisa Gunn. Our theme music is by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. Our intern today has been Justin Mayhew. To hear this show again, podcast any of our past shows, hear new additional interviews, and find out information about our guests and their work, visit us on the web at steinershow.org. And for public radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, I'm Mark Steiner. Don't forget, go to WEAA.org, make a contribution. We've got to get that $20,000 in the door. Take care.